to run. It's because you can't take the pace when you stop to have your fun. You find the tears run down your face when you stop, think a little. Are you a victim of the system? Any day now, they could let you down, yeah. Remember that I'll be there to see you through the pain. Remember that I'll be there to see you through your darkest days. When it's time the lights go down, he can barely take the pace. We'll start to scream his songs to the world that can't relate. Then she stops, thinks a little. Is she ready to have his children? Any day now, he could let her down, yeah. Remember that I'll be there.
You're listening to 91.5 WFO Medford, Tufts Free Form Radio. This is Academics on Air. I'm still waiting for my co-host Marissa, so we're just going to play some tunes before we jump into it.
We're on the borderline, caught between the times.
That was Whitney's On My Own, and before that we had Como Me Quieres. Sorry, I don't speak Spanish. And before that, Borderline by Tame Impala. Marissa should be here by 2:20. Right now it's 2:13, so we're going to play maybe two more songs in the meantime to wait for her. And then, unfortunately, I don't have a guest today, but we do have some interesting topics to discuss. We're going to be talking about higher education, both in the context of Tufts, in terms of its association with Sackler, the family that, I guess, profits from oxycodone, and just kind of this higher education's admission scandal and what that kind of means for not just wealthy people, but, you know, normal people as well. So stay tuned.
Would you believe me now if I told you I got caught up in a wave? Almost gave it away. Would you hear me out if I told you I was terrified for days? Thought I was gonna break. Oh, I couldn't stop it, tried to slow it all down. Crying in the bathroom, had to figure it out with everyone around me saying, you must be so happy now. Oh, if you keep preaching, then I'll keep coming back. If you're gone for good, then I'm okay with that. If you leave the light on, then I'll leave the light on. I am finding out there's a snow in the way, and I'm still dancing at the end of the day. If you leave the light on, do you believe me now that I always had the best intentions, babe? Always wanted to stay. Can you feel me now that I'm vulnerable in oh so many ways? Oh, and I'll never change. Oh, I couldn't stop it, tried to figure it out, but everything kept moving and the noise got too loud with everyone. You should be so happy now. Oh, you keep preaching, and I'll keep coming back. But if you're gone for good, then I'm okay with that. And if you leave the light on, then I'll leave the light on. I am finding out there's a snow. Still down.
We are here, both of us, me and Marissa, so now we're going to officially start the show. Thanks for listening to just some random tunes that didn't really have to do anything with what we're going to be talking about, but I hope you enjoyed them nonetheless. Yeah, do you have anything you want to say before we jump into it?
I certainly enjoyed the tunes. What were we just listening to, Jenna?
That was Far Away by Tompa Beats. It's kind of just something I came across on SoundCloud. I forget, there's like kind of like a genre of that music that I feel like it falls under. I can't remember the name, but it's just kind of like repeating like loops of like pleasant sounds, I would say. So, yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, thank you for your patience with us this morning, and we're getting into our topic now.
So I mentioned briefly earlier to those that were listening, but I'll repeat again just in case you didn't hear. We're going to be talking about kind of higher education, but kind of in two different contexts, specifically looking at Tufts and its relationship to the Sackler family. And the Sackler family, I guess you could say they're directly responsible for oxycodone. I don't know. hopefully you understand what
opioids.
I'm saying. Yes, opioids. And kind of like mass producing them and such, and some more negative side effects that have resulted from abuse of them. And then also kind of talking about the college admissions scandal, but not necessarily like, oh, check out these celebrities, but more looking at kind of like the regular people who have been affected by it, or who could, I mean, have been affected by this before this scandal came, but continue to be as well. So I'm going to play a song, and then I'll jump right into the first article, which is actually from one of our campus's own publications, the Tufts Observer. So stay tuned.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Under the Bridge by Red Hot Chili Peppers. So now we're just going to kind of jump right into it. So as I reiterated, or I said at the beginning, and I'm going to reiterate again, I am playing the role of both host and kind of guest today. And Marissa, I guess, will be our moderator.
I like that role.
Yeah, so I'm going to start with, like I said before, the TUS Observer article. And this article is titled, Follow the Money, Tufts Sackler School, Purdue Pharma, and the Opioid Epidemic. And so kind of just some context to Tufts' like relationship with the Sackler family. The Sackler family is like a pretty major benefactor to Tufts through like donations, both from like individual family members, but also they have like a foundation, a family foundation. And kind of the most like visible monument of this relationship is the Sackler School of Graduate Biomedical Sciences. So they paid, I'm not sure, probably a couple $1 million to have this school named after their family. And I believe it's located in downtown Boston in Chinatown with Tufts other health sciences schools. And so kind of one quote from the article that really kind of interested me was at the beginning of the article. So in June 2013, Tufts president Anthony Monaco traveled to Purdue Pharma's headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut to personally give Raymond Sackler an honorary degree. This event was made more significant as Monaco made the trek to Purdue Pharma rather than awarding him the degree at the commencement ceremony in Medford. Purdue Pharma is a privately held pharmaceutical company that Raymond, along with his two brothers, Arthur and Mortimer, created in 1991 after buying the company in 1951. In 1996, it became the site of the development of the prescription painkiller OxyContin. At the ceremony, Monaco praised Sackler's entrepreneurial spirit, claiming that, quote, it would be impossible to calculate how many lives he has saved, end quote. And so, I mean, I could read more, but that I think that one was kind of most poignant to me, and that being praised for saving lives, whereas according to like the CDC from like 2000 to 2016, more than 600,000 people have died from drug overdoses, with the majority of those involving an opioid. And that's not to say directly linking that to the Sackler family, but they are mass producing this drug that is kind of responsible for this epidemic in America. And I think one thing that is kind of important to note is that the Sackler family's gift to Tufts was received in 1980 before Purdue Pharma, as we know it, was developing and marketing OxyContin. So I don't know, that raises an interesting question as well, as whether or not, you know, is it okay for Tufts to be accepting donations like this? Not just because of like the connotations today, but like, oh, it was fine back then. But you know, things have changed with this person now. So, or not person, but entity now. And just kind of like what, you know, just because you have money, are you allowed to kind of give it, even if you get that money from kind of nefarious causes and stuff. And one thing I think is kind of ironic is there is a lab at the Sackler School called the Elizabeth Byrnes Lab, and its primary focus is the study of opioids and its biological effects. So I wonder if there's any conflicts of interest there between what the lab is looking at and like what's going on behind the scenes at Purdue Pharma. You know, the people who are kind of have funded this institution. I could do more quotes from the article, but I'm curious if you have any thoughts, Marissa.
Yeah, well, jumping on to that last point you just mentioned, a lot of what I have read about over my years of school has been regarding environmental chemicals, environmental pesticides, things like that, that are pollutants, and yet have industry scientists who are creating doubt, you know, that classic term merchant of doubt, meaning kind of interior to the organization, there is an understanding that there is great harm being done by this product. Yet industry scientists who are being hired by that company and PR folks and all of those people are selling this image of, you know, we're not sure, or there's no conclusive evidence and those types of things. So that is a really interesting point. I wonder if there are stipulations in place so that the academic research happening at this institution, at Tufts Medical School, is very separate from...
And not influenced at all by the money that there's... Yeah, I think that is something that the administration has said recently that they're looking into. They're reevaluating their relationship with the family and the company. I do think it's important to note, like, even though I'm kind of roasting Tufts here, like, they are not the only institution or kind of place that has accepted money from the Sackler family, like...
Notably museums.
Yes, museums like the Met, the Guggenheim, Oxford University, Columbia University also, but I know at least the Met, and I think maybe the Guggenheim, they've kind of renounced these. They've said, you know, we're not going to take any more money from these families, this family. And I'm not sure if they're, like, doing anything about the money they've already received. But Tufts has kind of taken this cautionary stance, but they're not, they haven't taken any definitive things yet in terms of, like, what they're going to do with their relationship.
To add on to that... we did receive, as students, received an email, and it was dated March 25th. I'm just looking at it now. And it so titled, from the Office of the President, so from Tony Monaco at Tufts, and titled, Review of Sackler / Purdue Pharma Involvement with Tufts Academic Programs. So that does attack, that addresses that influence question that we have. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to read the whole thing on air, but just skimming it now, I remember it being pretty... treading lightly, yeah, is how I would phrase it. Like, kind of saying, okay, we recognize that there is national attention on this currently, and especially in Massachusetts, Attorney General Maura Healey recently filed a lawsuit, so I'm quoting here, recently filed a lawsuit against individual members of the Sackler family, Purdue Pharma, and other affiliated organizations alleging that the practices used to promote products such as OxyContin and OxyCodone were fraudulent and resulted in addiction and death of many people in Massachusetts and across the country.
And this is not the only state to raise a lawsuit against them.
Do you know how many?
No, but I've heard of at least, like, I think New York and Oklahoma might be two others. And I'm sure more will follow suit, either depending or regardless on the outcome of, like, these lawsuits, I'm sure.
Yeah. And so then the focus of this Tufts email addressing it is centered on the Pain Research Education and Policy Program, abbreviated PREP, that Purdue has contributed money to, and these concerns that maybe Tufts University School of Medicine are a part of an effort to legitimize the marketing of these drugs. So I think that that really is that question of, okay, so if you can get scientists, credible scientists on your side, or at least able to stir up some doubt about whether some of the most flaming claims against you have holes in them, then your marketing can go on like normal, or you can, and that's the case with the tobacco industry. It's this classic example of, like, continuing to market cigarettes, saying, oh, these aren't bad for your health, or there's not conclusive evidence that these are bad for your health. And so it's interesting to me that the university decided, okay, we need to send out an email addressing this, but we're basically just saying, okay, we are aware that this investigation is going on. We're not taking any stand yet.
Yeah, I just find it interesting compared to other institutions that have, mm-hmm, quote-unquote, taken a stand, that Tufts is just like, okay, we're going to, like, dip our toes in the waters and, you know, we'll reevaluate. But I, you know, I just wonder, I'm sure, I mean, these are philanthropic donations, which universities kind of need to survive.
Especially Tufts with a small endowment.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Maybe more so than Oxford or Columbia. So I think, I'm sure that definitely comes into play with whether or not they're going to decide to kind of continue or discontinue their relationship with the family.
So what are your... what are your thoughts on what Tufts would be well advised to do moving forward from here? Do you have an opinion on that?
I don't know. I think you could take different perspectives. Like, if you are working for the university or, like, a PR person for the university, you might say something different than if you're, like, an activist or just someone who, like, kind of cares about the well-being of our population. I don't know. I think, like I said before, it's kind of a tough situation for Tufts, just because, you know, again, universities depend on philanthropy to kind of sustain themselves and their endowments and their quote-unquote missions. But it's kind of interesting when or if those donations and what they're associated with come in conflict with the mission or just kind of the quote-unquote objectivity of research and science.
And something I want to add to our listeners out there right now is that Jenna and I shared a class last semester through the X College that was about, it was called Critical Perspectives on Higher Education. And so it was really diving into the history of higher education in the United States, development of different types of universities, and then, you know, social movements and resistance and protest at universities, and then what the current topics are, like the admissions scandal at Harvard, and we're going to go in later today to talk about admissions scandals in the news recently. Sorry, a little bit of a pause there. But it is interesting to think about the university, especially a university like Tufts, marketing itself as really progressive in many ways and really a place where change happens. And at the same time, a place that, you know, in practice moves pretty slowly. And with the divest movement I'm thinking of, and encouraging universities to divest from fossil fuels
investments. There's a huge thing at Harvard about that right now.
Yeah, and there, I mean, previously, a few years back, there was a much bigger movement here at Tufts, too. And something I've heard a lot of students talk about is that Tufts really doesn't seem like they want to be the first one, and that a professor recently said to my class, actually, you know, I think that all universities are going to divest. It's just a question of when does that start rolling. And once it starts rolling, universities are going to hop on, and pressure from students is going to have an impact. But right now, I mean, if we all can put pressure on Harvard, maybe that will be successful. But it really seems like that the risk of putting investments and funders on the line is too large for Tufts to take on right now.
I mean, ultimately, even though it's a nonprofit, it is run like a business.
Yeah.
So. And so I think, yeah, they're thinking about their profit or their endowment. That's always going to be kind of at the forefront of any decision they make. So, unfortunately.
But it's really frustrating because I do think that it does not align with how Tufts markets itself in terms of being at the forefront of things.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a good stopping point. I mean, I could talk about this for a long time, but I think we're going to play another song and then transition to the next part of our show, if that sounds good with you.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be back soon. But first, Marissa has an announcement to make.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay. Here at WMFO on Saturday, May 4th, that is the date when the 4th will be with you, tune in to hear some of your favorite local musicians. Between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., WMFO will host 9 bands and musicians. Yes, folks, that is 9. Please tune in to WMFO 91.5 FM for Live Music Day, Saturday, May 4th.
Thank you.
That was Ashes to Ashes by David Bowie. And now we're going to do kind of a segue to the next segment of our show. Now we're going to be talking more kind of about like the college admission scandal. And while I think it'd be kind of interesting to like discuss like the juicy celebrity gossip about those that got kind of caught in what like the New York Times called it the nation's largest ever college admission scandal, there was one article I saw that I think was important because it like takes a step back and thinks more about those kind of widely affected by these unethical practices, both maybe directly by this, but also just kind of by our system in general, or how it's been over, I don't know how long this has been in its current state, but yeah. And so this article, it's from a New York Times article called What Does It Take? Admission Scandal is a Harsh Lesson in Racial Disparities. Here's the excerpt. The case underscored the racial and economic disparities that plague access to higher education. With an expansive network of pricey college preparation courses and counselors at their disposal, wealthy students find themselves with a leg up in an increasingly cutthroat competition for the limited slots at the most prestigious universities. In an effort to diversify their student bodies, universities are recruiting students of different racial and economic backgrounds, but those opportunities can come with backlash. For students of color who have found their qualifications questioned when they arrive at elite campuses, the case was dispiriting. This scandal exposed the fact that there is a misplaced emphasis on so-called affirmative action inequities rather than on privilege, said Mark Stucker, an educational consultant who hosts a weekly podcast called Your College Bound Kid, which focuses on access and equity in education. That is the big travesty of college admission. People of means are able to tilt the system in their favor, he said. So kind of a short quote like the other one, but I think It brings up a lot of interesting points. And I just want to say, I guess, before we jump to the discussion, I have some book recommendations. If you're interested in learning a more like comprehensive look into the selective admissions process, I would recommend Excellent Sheep, The Gatekeepers, and The Big Test. Those are all kind of give interesting perspectives into the process. Some are a little older, but I still feel like they ring true to what happens today. But yeah, do you have any thoughts jumping off?
Thank you for reading that selection, and I'm still processing some of it, but I do really see, and I've heard comments that center around this idea of why a certain person got in or didn't get in to a selective school, and yeah, say, like thinking like, okay, they, you know, they have the blank card, like they have the diversity card, and I think some other aspect that makes you stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And but that being said, in a negative light, like, oh, you know, that's why someone got in.
Yeah.
And
not because of your intelligence or your ability.
And I was going to say even more so, like, I don't think I hear that questioning of like, oh, you know, the card you have is the fact that you are very privileged and have been prepared really well, or even just you're very privileged and, like, you know, your family has a connection to this institution, isn't something I think I hear as much.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Definitely. I think something also that I both read and kind of, I guess, thought on my own, but then reading, like, people's tweets about it really solidified, is just, like, the way that I think the media or maybe even the people prosecuting this case were approaching it is, like, one quote, a U.S. attorney said that we're not talking about donating a building, we're talking about fraud. But I think it's interesting that this quote kind of, it's like, why didn't the rich people just exert their influence in the socially acceptable way of, like, donating a lot of money? And I think it's just funny that, you know, there are these quote-unquote socially acceptable ways for rich people to game the system and get their kids into whatever school they want.
And I think I may have even mentioned this to you or on air before, but I have been listening to The Daily, which is a podcast from the New York Times, and I was recommended by a friend, and I don't often listen to podcasts, but I've been enjoying this one because it takes a deeper look into current news issues, and the episode about this topic was really saying, like, okay, so there is the front door, the back door, and the side door, and I'm actually forgetting which one's which, but one, you know, one of those, like, I guess the back door, the side door, anyway, what is to college admissions is just donating a ton of money, and that's maybe not the guaranteed way to,
but it certainly boosts your chances.
Yeah, but it is the within the law way. And have you, you know, what questions can we be asking that within the law yet unjustly privileged way of getting into
mm-hmm. colleges? One quote I want to read, this is a tweet I saw online, and this is, the tweeter is Alexis Ned, and she said, the elite college admittance system is predicated on the completely legal ways rich people advantage their children via tutors, test prep, activities, sports, legacy, donations, time, and more. So it's funny to me when they fumble all that and say, F it, let's crime. So yeah, I think I've kind of just building off of what I was saying earlier, like, I just think it's funny that they chose this route when, you know, people of means have so many other ways that they can give their kids a leg up in the process. Like, I know people who, you know, they had tutors for the SAT or the ACT or whatever, or people to help them write their college essays and help them navigate the process. And while I had a, you know, a very helpful college counselor, she also had, I think, at least a couple hundred other students who she was, you know, assigned to. And my parents didn't really understand, like, I was the first child, and they're like, well, this is a whole different world from when we applied to college. So a lot of it was me kind of navigating it on my own or, like, looking for resources. We couldn't really, like, afford to do tutoring and stuff, so I kind of, like, bought myself one of those, like, big ACT books and was like, okay, I'll just take this test a bunch of times and see if I can figure out how to get better at this. But yeah, so it kind of just amazes me. And then there's a whole market out there. Like, it's a whole industry now, kind of the test prep or just like the college admissions industry. I don't know what you want to call it, but there's a large market for it, as you know, we've seen from this case. Well, that's a more extreme example, but there are more legal ways that generates a lot of revenue for our economy.
So I guess just a last question. It's interesting to me that the premise of this article is, let's turn away from the flashy attention that's being given to the celebrity parents in this case. Let's turn to look at all of the students currently in the system of higher ed and how they're affected. Do you think that this will change conversations on campus moving forward in terms of just, you know, not among students who know someone whose parent is one of these celebrities, but just students talking about what admissions means, or
I hope so. I mean, I'm sure it's very, like, in the article, like, a lot of these students, especially, they were kind of focusing on this one student at a high school in Kansas City, Missouri, and she was kind of very disheartened by this whole thing, because it was like it just kind of like reaffirmed what she already thought about the system, that it was kind of rigged in favor of people, wealthy people and white people and et cetera. So I don't know. I think it'd be interesting to kind of look at the college admissions process. Like, kind of referring back to our class last semester, one event, did you come? I can't remember. There was an event I attended with members of our ex-college class on higher education that was kind of not a debate, but kind of a discussion about the selective admissions process. And one potential solution that one of the speakers recommended was a lottery system, where kind of like all applicants who are qualified and meet some certain threshold, you know, rather than kind of like evaluating them on certain qualities and stuff, it's literally like what kind of it is for like charter schools right now. You are a number, and you know, someone picks out of a, I don't know, one of those like bingo machine balls, pickers. And I just wonder if maybe something like that would be a more just or equitable system for stuff, because there are so many qualified applicants to all these elite universities, and I think it's kind of a black box in terms of, I mean, for the most part, how people are selected to get admittance. So
just last night I had the opportunity to speak with a student at Tufts who is an intern for the admissions office here. Oh. And they were talking about how a big part of Tufts's model and what they're proud to do in admissions is creating a class. And that's something I've heard before, like, you know, intentionally bringing in students that are going to create a cohesive class and have a certain culture or character about it. And I think I see positives in that. Yet on the flip side, then if you're really being judged by your character, then rejection from Tufts would be a rejection of character.
I feel like it would hurt a lot more than if you're like, oh, I just didn't get chosen by this random number generator.
Yeah. Just another layer to that. And I'd be happy to continue speaking about it.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're at the end of our time, but we'd be curious if any of our listeners have any thoughts or potential solutions to this kind of the system we currently have in place.
And again, if you have any thoughts, comments, or would like to be a guest on our show, please write to us at academicsonair@gmail.com. And that's all for today. So this is Academics on Air with Marissa and
Jenna.
And you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. And we are excited to transition over to the next show, our friends at Overnight Oats.
Woohoo!
I'm on
I woke up, it was 7. I waited till 11 just to figure out that no one would call. I think I've got a lot of friends, but I don't hear from them. What's another night all alone when you're spending every day on your own? And here it goes.